Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Jesse Green here at the control panels. And today I'm excited because we're having a conversation about a topic that I think is really important for everyone on the planet, but particularly for those people who are in business. We're going to be talking about resilience, what it means, and how to develop it. And I'm joined today by Michael Lysenblatt, who's an expert on this topic. He's spoken to many, many businesses around the country, including Hocking Stewart, Toyota, RMIT, MLC, and a variety of others as well. He's also the author of a book called Pressure Proof, and you can find him at his website, bouncebackfast.com. Michael, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for taking the time to come and hang with us.
Oh, pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Mate, I wanted to firstly congratulate you on the work that you do because, and I say that not at all in a trite way, because I believe that resilience is a fundamental skill that every human on the planet could do well to develop. We live in a world that's changing rapidly. Things that we did a few years ago no longer work, so on and so forth. So being able to adapt to change and be resilient, I think, is a fundamental human skill. My question for you to start our conversation really is, how did you find you coming to this work? Did you develop this skill as a need of your own, or was it something you observed in the marketplace and thought, this is something I need to spend my time, you know, helping people with?
I came into this sort of one of two directions. Firstly, from a personal point of view, I was always interested in martial arts and in how we deal with pressure, being confronted and dealing with, you know, very intense situations. And it was through that I kind of developed an interest on your personal management of pressure. Interestingly enough, whilst I've been training now for about 30 years, when I first got involved with martial arts, I was quite fearful, didn't like actually being on the receiving end or a punch or a kick. So I would spend any of my fighting or sparring time in the class trying to avoid getting hit. And it created a whole lot of negative thinking in terms of my approach to pressure. And it got to a point where I had to reprogram how I thought to change how I fought in the class. But that also sort of led in through from a business point of view. After finishing my psychology training, I became a practitioner in shiatsu, which is not a dog, but it's like acupuncture, but without needles.
Yep.
And I had my own practice for about 7 years, worked with about 4,000 people over that time, and got to see firsthand how pressure directly impacted a person's well-being, their own ability to be connected with their relationships, their way in which they handle dollar productive and what they did, but also in terms of how they ran their business and the decisions that they made. So from that, I started kind of putting together content that I saw worked in a, both from a practice point of view, but also in a business point of view as well, and started creating the resilience work that I do today.
I think that's really fascinating. And I guess my question for you as well is, things are changing rapidly. It's a very exciting time to be alive because there is so much change and dynamism in the marketplace in just about every industry you can conceive of. But with that change comes challenge. And I guess my question for you is, do you think resilience skills are going to become more important in the future? I mean, I understand they're important now, but do you see that the need for people to be able to hone these skills is going to grow in importance?
Definitely more important. But what's even critical with that question is to define what resilience skills are. Some people, they would look at resilience and they'll see it as a method of coping, how I can cope and endure more. And there's value to that. In fact, initially when the term resilience started to be coined and thrown around, it was akin to sort of toughness, you know, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger type of thinking. Great validity in that. And there's some truth to that as well. But resilience is not simply about how much you can endure, how much you can hack and get through, how much pressure can I take before I develop the stomach ulcer, you know, how much can I do without, you know, losing sleep. There is value, but the true resilience in today's day and age, because as you mentioned, the nature of pressure today is different. It's not simply about volume, but it's also about disruptive change as well. We're dealing with a lot more overload of information. We're dealing with lots of decisions. So your resilience needs to do more than just cope and keep your head above water. You actually now need to adapt faster. You need to be able to learn different. You need to be able to incorporate change at a faster rate. And I don't just mean faster. You need to be able to bring the best version of yourself, whether it is your business, your work, your family, and your personal life, bring the best version of yourself, regardless of what's been thrown your way, the complexity of pressure, or the multitude of different things. So I would say resilience is about actually being the best version of yourself under pressure so that you actually become better, faster, smarter in high-pressure environments, not simply just cope and keep your head above water. So that's why resilience now is kind of more important than ever before, because the nature of pressure is changing so much, but you need to now change with that.
I think that's really important to be clear about, A, the definition of resilience, but also to understand the nature of pressure. And one of the forms of pressure that I see in the work that I do, and I'm sure you see it as well, is when there's rapid change, there's also uncertainty. And if we were to go back 20, 30, 40, 50 years, people knew that they were going to be in a career from the day they started work to the day they finished. They might even have stayed in the one job. And of course, that certainty is no longer part of our day-to-day existence. So I guess my question for you is, where does uncertainty fit into the puzzle here? Because the conversations I have with the business people and dental practice owners I deal with specifically, one of the questions that comes up regularly is, or one of the feelings that people express is uncertainty about the future. Where does that fit into the pressure matrix?
Okay, so what we've got now is uncertainty is created by a couple of different aspects. We're now in a situation where we are expected to do more in shorter periods of time. In fact, I even go a step back from that. We are now expected to be always on. We are in constant demand to have our attention out. If you think about it, in your role, in the world of dentistry, if you went back, say, 30 or 40 years, if you were the client, you were the client, right? Or patient, you were the patient. If you're in a meeting, you're in a meeting. If you're away with your family, that's where you were. But now, because we have laptops, mobile phones, mate, we can find you anywhere, anyhow, interrupt what you're doing, grab your attention and put it on my issue, because now you are more accessible to me. So the accessibility has changed, which means we no longer control where our focus or attention goes. We have so many more bits of technology and information that's grabbing our attention and putting it outwards. We are in reactive mode rather than choice mode. So what ends up happening is that we constantly go, go, go. See, and as you can appreciate, the body is designed not to be in on all the time. The body is designed to go from on to off, you know, with fluctuations in body temperature, different hormones released at different times, the sleep-wake cycle regulates the body. We're designed to be through movement. But now with technology, we go from on to on to on to on. And what that means is that it exhausts the system. We can't focus. And we have this constant hyper-vigilante or vigilant approach to getting everything done. There's this low level of anxiety that, you know, operates in the system. And we're wondering why now, you know, we're struggling to focus more, the kids are struggling to focus more, is because we are training our society to have constant attention out. So the nature of pressure now is changing how we operate. So if we simply respond to that with the traditional way, which is head down, tail up, let's just get through as much as we can in the shortest period of time and just get some stuff done, it leads us to being overworked, run down, and stressed out. That's the formula now. The traditional good work ethic is going to burn you out. So we actually need to understand that resilience is not simply about your ability to toughen up and get through, but it's also your ability to adapt, to sometimes slow down to a change and to move with things, because the accessibility is going to drain you. And I often ask the question, is technology a servant to you? Is it helping how you work? Is it serving you? Or are you a servant to it? Are you constantly on demand reacting to when technology wants you? And that's a very important distinction for people to make if they're looking to see why resilience is important and how it fits in.
Yeah.
It's not a coping mechanism to get that treadmill faster, but recognizing how you have the best version of yourself. And sometimes it's about going, oh, mate, I'm too reactive to what's happening around me right now.
I think that's really interesting, actually. And just as a small side note, that accessibility point you made, I think, is absolutely critical. We all know that social media and all those other sorts of channels are great. They're connecting people. But there is a dark side to that, in that hyper-connectedness that you spoke about, the accessibility. And ironically, you know, we're more digitally connected than ever before, but in some ways less connected than ever before as well.
Exactly, exactly. Any train ride you would take, if you go into a restaurant in a waiting area, look into your dental practice, at those who are in the waiting room. Who's reading a book? Who's talking to people?
Yeah.
No. Any moment we get, if I've got 10 seconds of downtime, I've got to check Facebook. I've got to check my emails. I've got to check this. I've got to stay connected.
It's quite interesting. And just that being reactive to the phone, just as an aside, I've turned off all the alerts on my phone so that I don't get those bings and beeps and whatever, because I found myself being a slave to the phone and checking Facebook way too often and all those sorts of things. So my social media usage has really cut down a little bit. And that for me has been about really reducing my pressure. It's about taking that little valve and getting a little bit of pressure out before it becomes a thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because otherwise, what we're doing is we're training our brains to have ADHD.
Mm.
We're saying you cannot miss out on something. You must be always connected. But unfortunately, that is not how the body works, particularly at high performance and for your peak performance. You can't be in the always on mode. You can't drink enough coffee to be switched on and work it with the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
And this is where the trap comes into when people think about resilience. Resilience partly is about toughening up. And we'll talk about that shortly, I'm sure, about the value of get over it and stop stewing over where things don't go. Well, there's great value. But part of it is also the value of letting go, knowing when to stop, when to let go, when to disconnect, and the value, and not waiting for, oh, when everything gets done, that's when I'll let go. No, you've got to wedge that in. You've got to decide, right now, I need to disconnect from technology. Right now, I need to disconnect from worrying about the stuff that I can't change. So it's a balance between the two, and that's how we bring the best version of ourselves or our team out when we're dealing with the new style of pressure.
I really like that, Michael, actually. What I really love about what you said, and ladies and gents, I'm going to encourage you to just go back 15, 20 seconds in the podcast and listen to what Michael said again, because I think it's about consciously putting time in where you do disconnect and not trying to find that time at the end of the day or when everything's ticked off and done, because it'll never be ticked off and done. It's, you know, the to-do list, you're never done, right? And so if you're waiting for it to be done, you're never going to be turning off either. And so we need to be able to take that opportunity to schedule downtime where I disconnect.
You want to actually wedge that in to your current day. You don't want to overschedule. It isn't about, right, now I've got to do my 10 minutes of my breathing. Now I've got to do my visualize. No, you just want to wedge that in sometimes spontaneous moments.
Mm.
I had this experience actually just yesterday. I was in the city for a series of meetings, and between that, I decided to grab a coffee at this coffee shop just tucked away in a shopping area. And this was tucked away. As we were waiting for the coffee, on the table, there was a small game of Connect Four. You remember the Connect Four game?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's great.
And this was a mini one because the tables there were really tight. Now, all the tables were taken. You know, there was a bloke there on his phone on the table having his coffee all by himself, but he had the Connect Four in front of him. And part of me thought, I really wouldn't mind playing a game of Connect Four. I don't know this guy, you know, who's sitting there having his coffee by himself, you know, but I thought, what the heck, let's give it a go. So I walked up to the table and I put in a piece in the Connect Four. And he looked at me and I said, it's your turn. He goes, oh, no, mate, that's okay. I said, no, it's your turn. And he looked back and he said, all right then. and we played. And what happened is he put his phone down, and for the next 2.5 minutes, we were like 2 10-year-old kids playing a game of Connect Four, trying to beat the other person. It didn't matter what was happening in our world, how many emails we had to return, what was happening. For that moment, we were 2 10-year-old kids playing Connect Four, slowing down the pace and getting off the treadmill. Once the game was done, hey, we came to our senses, grabbed the coffee, and got on with life.
Yep.
But we did that. And it's about grabbing a spontaneous moment to realize, for me to work at my best, I've got to get off the treadmill and do it in creative ways.
This is really important too, because the people listening to this podcast are high performers. And so I think there is this myth that high performers just work until they drop. And what I'm hearing you say very loudly, very clearly, is high performers consciously disconnect.
Yes. Because I don't want you to work achieve and then die, or work, 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 and then burn out, or B, work, 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 and just not have a family or a life to go home to. Because you can do that. You can choose to go, but I can handle it. You can, but it comes at a cost. And what we don't want is success in one area at the expense of success in another. So the idea of resilience, and I don't like the word balance, because balance to me gives a visual of equality, that you've got to have equal time on one another. But what it's about is realizing, for me to thrive in my environment, to be the best version of me, drive my business, be a great leader, be a great practitioner, and be a great parent or partner, I've got to be able to know when I switch on and when I switch off, when I toughen up and when I let go.
Yeah,
and to know that. And if we want to add another dimension of that, when do I speed up? When do I do things faster? When do I slow down?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I need to let go by slowing down.
Yeah.
Sometimes I got to toughen up by going faster. I just got to get things done, and I have to be super efficient and get it done. And the resilience in that piece is all about discipline, focus, and structure. But to do that, I got to sometimes let go, slow down, so that I can do that.
Yeah. Again, I really resonate with that. As someone who's experienced burnout myself, I know the effect of burnout. It comes as a massive, the metaphor for me is hitting the brick wall and falling in a crumpled heap. And you can only go so far for so long before you do that. And so I'm quite happy to share with everyone that I've experienced that. It's not a pleasant thing. I wouldn't recommend it. And it came about because through a variety of circumstances, but one, because I had the wrong business model, but that's a conversation for another time. But when I was going through some of those things and processing it after the fact and trying to learn the lessons, I was speaking to a very good friend of mine who's a builder. And I just said to him, you know, I just want to do the good parts of my job and not the yucky bits of my job and so on and so forth. And my mate, Jerry, is 20 years older than me. He's almost like he doesn't like me saying he's like a second father. He prefers the term big brother. But he's very wise. And he said to me, Jesse, there are times in your job where you do need to disconnect, but there are times when you need to grit your teeth. I'm a builder. I get under houses. Do I like getting under houses? Absolutely not. Do I like crawling through cobwebs? No. But there are parts of my job that I just have to do because it's part of the job. So my question, I just want to pivot for a second to the gritting the teeth part and knowing when that's appropriate too, because it's not all rainbows and unicorns either. We can't just say we're going to disconnect, I'm going to sit and drink lattes all day and so on. So where do we grit our teeth?
There's two parts to that question. It's where do I grit my teeth and how do I grit my teeth? Because I want to say where. And I think the first part is knowing when you've got to get your head down and tail up.
Yep.
And I think it was written, I think it was Brian Tracy who wrote the book Eat That Frog,
yep,
which suggests that you do the tough stuff first. The moment you are feeling an apprehension, oh, I don't want to do that, or I really don't want to make those calls, or I don't want to have that tough conversation, the moment you feel some sort of excuse or avoidance, to me, that's a sign of something you need to do now. You want to flip that and go, this is a time for grit. This is not a time for avoidance. This is a time where I've got to do the tough stuff, because you're feeling your body is pulling away because it's confronting or it's difficult or it's challenging. So use that natural gut reaction to be a trigger or a sign or a symptom, rather, of when I need to bring some grit in. When I'm trying to avoid something or I'm justifying why I'm not doing it, realize it's either just fear in play that I don't want to confront something, or I'm uncertain of how to handle that. The next part of that question is, well, so how do I toughen up? How do I actually do that? I'm finding now what we're seeing is that there's a lot more conversation that's taking place around how people are feeling in their position, which is great. We're getting a lot more self-awareness of people identifying when I'm feeling stressed, when I'm feeling overloaded, and we're having dialogue. And this is great because it's replacing the old model of just shut up and do the work and don't complain. We're now going the other way, which is great. We are respecting mental health. We're understanding the value of expressing, and we're uncovering things of anxieties and stress that are going through. The challenge now we're facing is being, and at the risk of saying this, we can sometimes be too indulgent with over-describing, over-talking, and not enough activity. And we want to, the moment we're finding that I'm over-describing, I'm over-processing, and that becomes an avoidance for activity, then the actual strategy is in the old Elvis song, a little less conversation, a little more action, please.
Yeah.
Let's just get in, do the work, and let's deal with whether I'm good enough, I can do it, whether I'm prepared enough. Let's deal with the fallout of that, because that's easier to deal with because it's something, as opposed to overthinking it and overprocessing it. Did I do the right thing? How do I go about it? Sometimes the planning and the thinking and the over-talking is it's hidden procrastination.
And so on that topic, because again, the people listening to this podcast are generally high achievers, but one of the conversations that comes up regularly in the coaching work that I do is, and we had a bit of a conversation off air about it, is instant gratification. And there is a place where you've got to get the work done. You've got to put the shoulder to the wheel. And it's not all about, I'm going to be a millionaire tomorrow kind of routine, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to understand, as you appreciate, anything that is working on, you're going to take time to do, and it's going to have a series of setbacks along the way.
Yeah.
Now, let me put this in context as to why we are now struggling. And this is not just the younger generation. It's actually all through why we are now struggling with the idea of delayed gratification or grit, why grit is becoming a more important conversation. It's because, again, the nature of pressure is changing, which is retraining our expectation of how long things should take. So we now have an increased expectation or an increased expected output to do more in a shorter period of time. So, for example, you can have your day wonderfully planned out, mm-hmm. and by the time you turn up, you can receive half a dozen emails, texts, or calls that totally change how you're going to follow through with your day, what people are expecting of you in whatever time frame. So we can get a lot more dumped on us in a short period of time. And that's because now we're living at a time of immediate gratification. Now, if I want something, I get it right away. I don't have to wait. If I want light, I hit a switch. If I want heat, I hit a button. If I want food, I get fast food now. If I want movies, I just download. I don't go down the store and hire a DVD. If I want music, I just download what I want now. If I can't afford it, I just get credit. Yep. I simply get what I want now, which trains people now to expect more from you in less time with unrealistic expectations. So I don't have to have the patience to wait, or I don't want the patience to wait for things to happen. I'm expecting faster results, which means when things don't happen according to the plan, and tell me if anyone's plan has ever actually followed the plan, I would love to hear from you, because life doesn't follow a plan. What's that old saying? We plan and God laughs.
Yeah, exactly.
So the life never goes according to plan. And if we get annoyed, frustrated, down, upset, or self-doubting when these failures, setbacks, and problems occur, then we're just shooting ourselves in the foot, because we've got to understand life is full of these setbacks. And the more we can realize we're not going to have immediate reward, we've got to sometimes put in the long term, the hard yards to get the results. Society is training us, or technology is training us, that it's about immediate gratification. You remember when we were kids, we'd go to, if you wanted to see a movie, it would be a special thing. You'd go to the movies on a Saturday afternoon, you'd think, it's a wonderful thing, and you'd sit through the entire movie, whether you loved it or didn't, and it was special. In fact, you used to have to get dressed up to go to the movies. It was a special thing. Now, if I want to watch something, just pop on YouTube. And if I'm bored, I flick to the next one. If you watch kids now, when they watch movies, they're watching a movie, but they've got their phone in their hand at the same time. Why? Because they don't have to focus the whole way through. How this affects us now in business with grit is that now we're losing the priority, and I mentioned before, I believe we're losing the delayed gratification gene, because we're trained that if I want it now, I get it now. And in some cases, it's true, but in a lot of cases, in terms of effort and business and outcome, it's working in the opposite direction. We are not trying long enough. We're giving up scoring in kids' games. We're giving medals for eighth place. We're allowing extension after extension if you don't get the paper in. We're showing that you've got to get the things done. Failure is part of life. It's okay. But it also means that we've got to understand that we've got to put the work in to get things and be okay with failure.
Okay. So far we've covered the fact that pressure is changing, the nature of pressure is changing. We've spoken about the fact that we need to consciously disconnect. We've spoken about the fact that we need to have expectations realistic expectations around how long it takes to achieve success in a chosen field, and that mastery of any kind is going to come with setbacks, and we've got to be okay with setbacks, and we need to be able to develop grit to get through those. So I want to ask you about what to do when a setback does occur, because again, people listening to this will go, I understand that, but I'm going through a particular setback at the moment. What are some practical strategies I could implement today or tomorrow or the next day? And, you know, I don't want to get into the instant gratification thing, but what are some practical and tangible things that I could do to help me overcome a setback, to bounce back, as your book says?
All right. So number one is you want to be light, simply meaning this: a setback doesn't define your life. It simply means that whatever you did didn't work. And we often attach too much meaning to what the setback is. And I think particularly, and I'm going to use a stereotype for particularly potentially for your listeners who are high achievers, who have worked hard to get into a career, to get into a course, to get a career, to establish a practice. And there's a lot riding on getting things right. Between medical practitioners and lawyers, a mistake is quite significant, has significant fallout. So there's a mentality around that to say, I've got to get things right. And what that does, it attracts a certain type of person who is all about getting things right, which simply means when I face a setback, a failure, I'm hard on myself. I'm not light. I'm heavy with it. I overanalyze it. If you want to be able to utilize the setback, and that might sound like an odd thing to say, you want to utilize that to make progress, you need to fail forward. And how to fail forward simply means embrace the fact that you are going to fail, that they will happen from time to time. It doesn't mean anything bad, but allow yourself to be light. Don't get hung up that it means you're not good enough, that it means that you no longer have the edge. It simply means that whatever you did didn't work. And allow yourself to just learn from it and move on. The more you stew over it and analyze it and try and work it out and go, well, how do I, that there's value in sitting and reflecting. But if you get stuck on that, if you're still doing that an hour or two later, if you're still calling up people or thinking about this and talking to your partner later that night and the next day, then you're not being light. You're being heavy with this. Now, you don't want to be heavy with failure. You want to be light, because if you can have a relationship with failure that says failure doesn't mean I'm wrong or bad, it just means what I did didn't work, and there's a bit of learning in there, if you approach it with that lightness, I get to fail forward, which means I get to progress. I get to grow and be better. Now, this is the more modern version of resilience. Resilience and pressure proof is give the best version of myself so I can grow and thrive, but I become better under pressure. And allowing failure to grow, to serve me, allows me to be better. If I punish failure, if I reprimand failure, if I persecute failure and beat myself up for it, then I'm falling into the old version of resilience, which means just grit and get through and toughen up. Again, value in that, but I'm not growing. I'm not having space to grow. And that is the same whether you are dealing with yourself or whether you're dealing with your team. If you persecute failure, if you punish failure, if you humiliate failure, if you put failure down, you're not allowing your team to try things, to take initiative. You're not allowing your team to grow and to learn. So they operate out of fear, and they operate always within a comfort zone. They don't take initiative because failure is persecuted. So we want to understand that there is a space in failure that allows us to grow. Now, there's a difference between failing and growing and incompetence. You know, if we're just not learning from it, then to err once is okay, but to do it several times is stupidity. We need to actually grow from what we're doing, not just make the same mistake over and over again. But we also want to make sure that we're giving space for that. And that's a mentality of saying it's okay and grow from it.
Yeah. And again, I think that, ladies and gents, if you're listening to this podcast, I'd really encourage you just to go back and have a listen to that section from Michael as well. I think there's an importance in there about being light with failure and taking the lessons from it and trying not to hang on to it. And I know dentists that I know generally, again, massive cliche about to pass my lips, is that most dentists I know are perfectionists, which means that we're either perfectionistic by nature or dental school hones that into us. And so we tend to see things quite binary. You know, it's either right or wrong from a clinical perspective. It's either, I remember at university, it always felt like it was either perfect or wrong. And yes. I think we've got to look at the shades of gray in between those two ends of the spectrum and understand that progress is great. If we're getting better, that's great. We don't have to be perfect every single time. And similarly with our team, was if we can be light with our team, because I'm curious to understand from your perspective, Michael, the cost of not getting this right in terms of staff turnover and productivity, that must be huge.
It's huge. It's huge. And I just, before I touch on that, I just wanted to address something you said before, that from a dentist point of view, many would be a perfectionist. And can I say, I want my dental practitioner, my orthodontist, my person who I'm working with, to be the most detailed oriented, most anal retentive practitioner on the planet. You know, I want them to actually strive to be the best in what they do. So that is a good work ethic and the right mindset to have when you're dealing with anything in the medical field. I want that to happen.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
I also understand that if things don't go according to plan, I want my health practitioner that I'm putting all my faith in to have a growth mindset to go, okay, let me learn from that so I can become a better version of myself so that I can improve on that, which simply means there's a time to have a surgical mindset, which basically means there's no room for error. I'm going for perfection. And there's a time to have a scientific mindset, which is to say, as a scientist, I'm constantly trying or testing out different hypotheses to work out which one's right and which one's not. So I'm going to go through a whole series of failed experiments. Thomas Edison failed over 1,800 experiments before getting the light globe. And Colonel Sanders was rejected by over 1,000 chicken stores before getting his recipe out. You know, there's whole stories about rejections and failures. So we need to have a balance between the surgical mindset and the scientific mindset.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that respect. Yeah. Let me come back to the question you asked in terms of the fallout, in terms of productivity and in terms of engagement turnover with staff, in terms of, I think the context was reprimanding failure. Was that the context?
Yeah, or just not having the resilience built into the team. And so we don't have that growth mindset. We're constantly expecting perfection and it's either right or wrong and all those sorts of things. So, yeah.
Yeah. And what we're doing is by not having a growth, and just to clarify, you know, the work of Carol Dweck, which talks about a fixed mindset or a growth mindset, the work that she was to do with high-performance athletes, and she looked at those that performed on talent alone had a fixed mindset that it was just their talent that was going to get them through, so that when they hit up against players that were of equal, if not better talent than them, they, in the face of adversity or failure or challenge, they didn't rise to the occasion because they thought all their success was based on talent. So they didn't progress. Where those that thought it was more on practice had a growth mindset to say, actually, no, it's the more that I practice, the better that I get. And this whole concept of growth versus fixed is now taught widely through schools as well, getting kids to understand the value of a growth mindset. In terms of team resilience, the whole thing of growth mindset, which simply means that I want you to be able to turn up and do the best version you can in your role you've got right now. To do that, I need to empower you, and I need to have clear expectations on what I'm wanting from you, what the standards of delivery, what are the fallouts or the consequences of non-delivery of these expectations, both with patients, with business admin, etc., or across the board. That needs to be clear. But for you to do your job, for you to turn up and be the best version of you, I've got to give you space to learn. I've got to give you space to grow. I've got to understand what currencies of success you work by. For example, is the currency of acknowledgement an important one for you? Does that allow you to grow? Does the currency of gratitude, is that an important one for you to learn faster and apply yourself? Studies have found that there is about 23% of Australian professionals are happy to take a pay cut in a different role because they can now do work that they enjoy more. They'll take a pay cut to do work they enjoy more but for less pay, simply because it's giving them a different satisfaction. There's a different currency that they get. So people will put their better version of themselves forward if they're getting an acknowledgement, if they're feeling a sense of success and progress. So there's two parts. There's number one is allowing space to grow in that, and also working out what's their currency of success as well. What do they need? Do they need acknowledgement? Do they need to see progress? Are we aiming to a goal that's worth chasing? What do they want? What are they wanting to achieve? What you need to do as a practitioner is to get out of the technical mind, technical hat rather, and put on the hat of understanding people. The psychology of people is based on some simple principles. We need to feel a sense of progress in our world. We need to feel that we are going somewhere, we're achieving something. And in the absence of that, we don't feel that, I just fall into a kind of a rut, kind of like I just do the same thing, different day, and I'm just going through the same stuff, and I'm not showing any great initiative. I'm just getting up and going through the motions. But if I've got a sense of purpose, drive, want to do more and give the best version, it comes from me. But you as a practitioner, as a leader of your practice, need to take the time to tap into that. What do they want to achieve? What are they looking for out of the role? How can we extend them? What are the currencies of success that they need? That comes from a conversation and you understanding that you've got to sometimes stop and acknowledge progress, discuss the challenges without the reprimand.
Yeah, yeah. So, mate, in all of this, there is still a place for having the tough conversation, right? And so sometimes as we're creating space for growth, there is still an expectation around standards. There's still an expectation around output. So I guess my question and conversation that I'd like to start as we think about wrapping up is there are some difficult or necessary conversations that need to be had. What's your thinking around introducing those conversations? You know, sometimes it takes courage for the person to initiate the conversation, but equally it takes good grace to be able to receive that conversation. Where does that fit into resilience and bouncing back?
All right. So the resilience piece around that, and you've tapped into an area that I love talking about, which is the dynamics of conversation, the dynamics of interactions. The resilience there is about, as you've mentioned, it's having the guts to have the conversation. It's having the clear thinking of separating the emotion from the message. In other words, not turning up with emotion, and but being clear, but also being mindful of the emotional dynamic that
Absolutely.
Can be at play.
Yeah, totally.
And for the person who is receiving it, it's having the ability to separate ego from learning, to go think about not how is it affecting me? How are you saying something nice about me? You know, I'm thinking more about ego compared to what can I take and what can I learn from this? So I would say that the two context is, number one, if you are having the tough conversation, to have the guts and to get your best opportunity of get this message across, it's about clarifying context. So in other words, before I even start, I want to be clear about what I'm talking about, why we're having the conversation, and what outcome I'm hoping we get from this.
Absolutely.
So that the person on the receiving end knows what they're in for. They're not kind of guessing, is this a appraisal? Is this a reprimand? Am I losing my job? Well, no, what's happening? I don't have to be anxious and I don't have to be defensive because the context has been clear. Where a lot of leaders and practitioners go wrong is that they dive straight into a conversation without allowing the person to know the landscape. It's kind of like, here's what we're going to be covering, here's the order, here's the outcome, and that's how we're going to go through. So you don't have to worry about there being any cloak and dagger, any kind of thing mysterious that's going to pop up and I'm going to come to bite you at the end. Here's the process of the conversation. So that's important. It also means it takes a bit of thinking as to how I'm going to say that and structure that to give them the best chance to be open for feedback.
Ladies and gents, for the Practice Max clients listening to this conversation, you'll recognize that's our necessary conversation framework right there. And my view around conversations is having a structure and preparing for that conversation, both in terms of content and understanding what emotions might be present for you, what emotions might be present for the recipient, allows you to go into that conversation emotionally ready for it and conversationally ready for it as well. And I think just putting a little bit of thought before you go into those conversations is really key to getting better outcomes. Would you agree with the preparation piece at all?
Oh, that sounds fantastic. That's spot on in terms of getting your head in the right place, because you're preparing them. You're also preparing yourself so that if there's a bit of resistance or an emotional response, it doesn't catch you off guard and it doesn't trigger you to react in a way that gets you either out of control or off track.
Yeah, it's really funny. Actually, Michael, I tell the story quite regularly that I had to have one of those conversations, and just so that I knew that I might get triggered in that conversation. And so as I was going into that conversation, I wrote a little post-it note for myself that just said, don't take the bait. And so for the whole conversation, I had that post-it note in my pocket between my thumb and forefinger. And I was just rubbing it. So every time something would come up where I was likely to react rather than respond, I just had that don't take the bait kind of quickly flash into my mind, and I was able to filter out responses before they passed my lips. So it was quite fortuitous. But
that's a great anchor as well. It's interesting that even though you couldn't see what you'd written, you had it in your hand, just touching the post-it note kind of reminded you of that, of to be mindful.
Absolutely.
Present. Yeah.
Totally anchored it for me. So that was great. Michael, you've been incredibly generous today. And ladies and gents, I'd really encourage you to check out Michael's work. You can head across to his website, which is bouncebackfast.com. And if you go through that website, there's a bunch of stuff there that you can grab a copy of Michael's book. There's the resources page, there's articles, there's a heap of things there for you to peruse and have a look at. Michael, I really just want to firstly say thank you for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. You've covered a lot of territory and it's been really in depth, and I think it's of tremendous value. And I think that the work that you're doing, it's already very important, but I think it's going to become essential work for anyone in life, but particularly those in business. And ladies and gents, I'd really commend Michael's work to you. It's profound and it's really important. Michael, as we wrap up, mate, is there any last pieces of wisdom that you would like to leave the audience with?
The main message here is to make pressure your friend, is not to fight it like an enemy, not to treat it like an arm wrestle that you have to beat, but to understand it's like a dance. You've got to work out how it moves and how you move with it. And sometimes you're stepping forward, but sometimes you're stepping backward. But you're doing it in order to stay in track with the dance that you're doing. So make pressure your friend and learn how to dance with it. So sometimes you have to step forward and sometimes you have to step back. And it's just going to move it like a dance so that you have multiple currencies of success. That it's not always about just work, but there's aspects that you can succeed in different aspects of your life. So that resilience isn't just toughening up and going. It's also sometimes letting go, sometimes speeding up, sometimes slowing down.
Yeah. Ladies and gents, Michael Lysenblatt is easily found at his website, bouncebackfast.com. I'd really encourage you to, again, check out his stuff. And Michael, from all of us here at Savvy Dentist, thank you so much for taking the time. So many pearls of wisdom today, lots of good notes for people to, you know, really be jotting down. And from all of us here, thank you so much.
Oh, Jesse, an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.